God. Am I? Yeah. Ooh, doo, 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 doo. Yeah. Okay.
What was that?
It's me testing. That's how I test my audio.
The voodoo chant?
I doo, 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 doo.
Welcome to Psych Tech, the psychology and technology podcast. I am Kelly Dunlap, and I'm joined by Josue Cardona, the bright sunshine on a cloudy day.
Hello.
So today we are picking up where we left off last week. We're reviewing the second half of Jane McGonigal's book, Reality is Broken. So if you didn't listen to last week's podcast yet, you can go do that now. Not required to enjoy this one in particular, but there will be some continuity, and we might refer to the previous podcast. So if you want, you can pause, go back and listen to that as well, or forage ahead, because the first part of the book is a lot of the research behind what are games and why are they better than reality and why do people prefer to play them than address real world topics. And the second half of the book are some really great examples of how games and game design are actually changing the world right this second, or at least in the case of this book, that we're doing that in 2010. So 5 years ago, they hopefully have changed the word a little bit since then.
And even though we didn't mention this last week, the reason that we kind of sparked this conversation is because Jane McGonigal is releasing a new book later this year called Super Better. And we'll get to that title in a second in this book. But so she does have a brand new book coming out. Again, we're talking about her first book, Reality is Broken. Hopefully we'll talk about that one when it comes out too. What do you think?
Oh yeah. Yes. Like the midnight release, I will be there to pick it up. She actually tweeted out for people to win an advanced copy, and I entered, and I don't think I won, but I tried to get an advanced copy. But yeah, I mean, we might as well start talking about Super Better, because that's the first chapter of the second part of the book is talking about different games that use gameful design to help actually improve the real world. And so she talks about Chore Wars a little bit, which is kind of an RPG, a role-playing game style to do chores where you compete against people in your house to, like, oh, if you clean the bathroom, that's 20 points. If you do the dishes, that's 30 points or whatever. She also talks a little bit about Quest to Learn, which is a school in New York where the entire curriculum is based as a game. So you don't have tests, you have boss battles, and you don't have homework, you have quests. And the entire experience is about wanting to learn these different academic tools so that you can complete your quests, which is really, really cool. And then she spends a lot of time talking about Super Better, which is an app that she created after she suffered a concussion and experienced a lot of the mental health side effects of a low-grade concussion. Difficulty focusing, difficulty with memory, motivation, depression, and being a game designer at some point. I think she even says in the book, I was going to make a game out of this or it was going to kill me.
Yeah. And she didn't, it wasn't an app originally. Now it's an app.
No. Yeah, now
everybody. But she made a game. She kind of made the whole experience of rehabilitation into a game. And I gotta say, I actually use some of the terminology from that, from Super Better all the time. Like the idea of power-ups and the idea of, enemies that you're battling and putting them, putting stuff in your life on that process towards your goal in that terminology. It makes a lot of sense, and it's really cool to view it that way.
Well, especially if you think about something like depression. When people talk about depression, they say, I am depressed. When people talk about cancer, they don't say, I am cancer. They say, I have cancer. And just that one word change is a change in ownership, is a change in agency. And so by framing mental health struggles, things that we can't really see necessarily, into physical bad guys, so you can say, I'm fighting depression, or I'm battling sadness, or I'm in an epic boss fight with healthy eating, or I guess negative eating. You don't want to fight healthy eating. But that it takes it from being inside me as I have this thing, I'm worthless, I am this negative thing, and putting it outside of you as something that you can actually fight.
Well, and because of the way that it's structured, what you're doing is you're not like, maybe your goal is to beat depression, maybe, right? Let's say that's what you set up as your ultimate goal. But then you break that down. Like, well, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Right. What does depression look like to you?
Yeah, exactly. And then you have different pieces. I really like using it with anxiety a lot, yeah. Right? So you would take different scenarios where you would be scared or where you did have some sort of anxious feelings. And then you would set those up separately as things to battle throughout the week. And then as long as you battle it, you still got some sort of experience, whether you felt like you beat it or not. And kind of that experience kept building up your resilience, which is a big part of what the game is about. That even if you don't beat that bad guy in the moment, just the act of having tried it builds up your resilience just a little bit. And you're getting stronger. You're getting better, right? Yeah. Along the way.
It breaks it down the way games break it down. It starts at really easy levels. So I've used Super Better. And before I got my Fitbit, when I was trying to get myself to exercise more. And so I put down like healthy weight as one of the goals that I wanted to, or a healthy lifestyle. That's what I wanted. And
it's very vague.
Yeah, but there are the power-ups that are specific for like exercise and healthy eating. And so I equipped those power-ups. And I kid you not, one of the very first things they have you do, or that they recommend as a challenge for you to do, is to just get in a sneaky workout. So maybe instead of sitting down to eat your breakfast, you stood up while you ate your breakfast. Or instead of driving to the mailbox down the street, you walk to the mailbox down the street. So finding sneaky ways to just walk an extra 10 steps, maybe even walk up one flight of stairs and then take the elevator the rest of the stairs up. So ways to kind of sneak in a more healthful lifestyle. And it falls into one of four modules. So there's the resilience, there's physical health, there's mental health, and there's emotional health. And then you get power-ups and or not power-ups, but plus ones. And you can level up the different areas that you're trying to work on. And so it's this really great visual feedback system. And it's a way to incrementally see improvement, which goes a really long way with, like you mentioned, Josue, with resilience, sticking with it. And the, like we talked about last episode, the hopeful chance of success. Because it's not one huge goal of never eat another chocolate sundae, which will never happen. But, you know, maybe instead of eating that piece of chocolate cake at 10 o'clock at night, if you're hungry, have a carrot or popcorn, you know, substitute something else.
And you can frame like that. If ice cream sundae is your, or that brownie sundae is your weakness, right? That is your bad guy. It's something to conquer. Then you can put that down. As one of your bad guys. And then when you come across that brownie sundae, what did you do? Were you able to resist it, or did you give in? Right? And then if you resisted it, then, you know, now there's a record of that. Now you can put that down and be like, hey, I beat that bad guy. You know, I overcame that temptation to do that. And then it's just such a cool visual and such a cool way to look at it. And it creates this awareness of what you're doing, you know, of like, all right, This is an obstacle for me. This is a challenge. Can I overcome it? And maybe I didn't overcome it today, but the way it's set up, like, I can overcome it again. You know, I can come across that challenge again later, and maybe I'll beat it next time.
Yeah, and if for example, I didn't resist that ice cream sundae or whatever my temptation would be, one of the things is it asks you, did you conquer this challenge or no? And if you did conquer it, or if you did not conquer it, how difficult was this challenge for you? And then it kind of adjusts based on your feedback, which is really nice. There's no, we talked about it last podcast too, there's no penalty for failure, because there is no failure. It's okay. So you didn't beat the boss this time. That's okay. We're going to go, we're going to do some grinding, we're going to level up some more points. So that way, the next time you come across this boss, you know, you've got a better chance of walking away the victor.
And it's up to you to tell the app if you defeated it or not. And if you haven't defeated it, then it stays there, and you can keep challenging it over and over and over again until you defeat it. And then it's like, all right, then you can cross it out, and then you don't have to come across it anymore.
Just like a video game.
Just like a video game.
And any game, I guess.
Yeah. And the idea of power-ups is actually my favorite part. And I tell people this all the time, like even when we're working on, I can use different terminology, right? To work with somebody, to address something. But then the power-ups part is pretty consistent. I always say power-up because people know that one thing that gives them energy, or that one thing that motivates them, or that one thing that when they're feeling down, cheers them back up. And that type of thing is so important. And we don't think about that. We think about just addressing the bad guys, and we don't think about, like, we need energy and we need support, and we need all these other things. And your power up can be a phone call with your best friend, or it can be watching a funny TV show or listening to your favorite song. And you can put those down, and then you can, you know, you can tell the app, like, listen, I've used this power up, I'm using this power up, and you can kind of keep a record of it and see, like, oh yeah, like every time I was down, like, this song really helped me. Like, Eye of the Tiger was exactly what I needed, right before that run.
Yeah, Sephiroth's theme, that will get me running.
Nice.
Sephiroth. But, you know, it another thing I like is that you can create your own custom power-ups. So, for example, when I was having my really, really awful time on my internship, it was about the same time that Frozen came out. So one of my power-ups was to sing along to Let It Go in my car, like, as loud as I could. So I'd be driving home on the Beltway from a really crappy day, and I would turn on Let It Go and just crank it all the way up and just, I mean, I'm sure I looked ridiculous, but I didn't care because it felt so good afterward. Just, I mean, the lyrics and getting to try and sound like Idina Menzel, which is never going to happen because she's amazing. But yeah, that you can customize it. So even if the power-ups there maybe aren't working quite for you, you can create your own. And I know that's something that we talk about all the time in therapy, is that these are tools in your tool belt. If one doesn't work, it doesn't mean that you're beyond help. It means that we need to try something else. I know with one person that I was working with in particular, I was doing progressive muscle relaxation with her because she was very anxious, and she really didn't like it. It actually made her more tense. She didn't like the idea of tensing and trying to relax. So I skipped over and I did some mindfulness, you know, put your thought on the leaf and let it go. And she just clicked with that and ran with it. And so I was like, okay, you know, it's if one doesn't work, it's okay. There's lots of different things to try. And I think that's what Super Better gets across, is that there's not one right way. There's not a wrong way. It's finding your way.
Now, the app has power packs, which are already, like, designed and set up for different things, but it is fully customizable. And one thing that I really liked was, you know, in therapy, I can help a client kind of design it. And even in a non-clinical situation, it has an ally system. So you can have an ally, which is someone else with the app, who can kind of see your progress, and they can actually recommend challenges to you. And they can, like your progress or one up your progress. So, and she describes that that was one of the most important things, if not the most important thing for her, which was that she had these allies, with her. I believe it was her sister and her husband. She kind of recruited them, and they were a part of the game. And we talked about that last week, that there's, like, this community aspect and this social aspect, right? That you can capitalize on, and it makes things better when you do it with other people. And in this case, I mean, it's support, right? Your support system is so important for any type of self-improvement or healing. And, you know, it's built into the game. It's so cool. And there's actually a forum that you can go to if you don't have anybody in your life that you, like, would actually be willing to be an ally for you, just because they're, you know, they're tech illiterate, or they don't like they don't like video games or anything like that, or you just can't depend on them.
Or you don't feel like you can ask anybody.
True.
It's like a social anxiety or a depression where you're in the mindset that nobody cares. Nobody in real life will actually care about you, which, if you're thinking that, that's wrong, because I care about you. I don't even have to know you and I care.
And there's a forum full of people who are looking to be allies and looking for allies. And you might find somebody who's dealing with something very similar to you. And so she created this whole thing. Not only for her, it was like pen and paper when she started. Then she got better, and she created this app.
She got super better.
She got super better, and she created this app. And it was like, it was a whole company around this, Super Better Labs. And, you know, they have the forum and everything. And it, you know, the app is up. You can get it on, I believe it's on Android finally. And the forum's up, and you can do the whole thing online. It's really, really cool. And I know for a fact that she's going to address the app and situations, like case studies of people who've used the app, in her new book.
So with that teaser, we'll go into that in just a second. But I guess the last thing I wanted to say about the game itself that I really enjoyed was the fact that it reframes the idea of struggle and difficulty as a hero's journey. So a super better is making yourself into a superhero and recognizing your superpowers.
Oh, and you have to pick a superhero name.
Yeah, you have to pick a superhero name and your superhero quest. And I feel like that's so powerful because the hero archetype, at least in Western European American culture, is really, really powerful. The hero archetype is all about somebody. I mean, think about all your DC comic books and your Marvel comic books who have had a traumatic experience of some kind, and then that changes them for, arguably for the better. I mean, Krypton explodes and Clark Kent is abandoned as a baby, but he grows up to be Superman. Batman sees his parents murdered and he grows up to be a fighter for justice. And it's this idea of constantly overcoming seemingly impossible challenges to make yourself and the world a better place. And it's, again, a Jungian archetype right there that goes back. I mean, there's hero stories that are thousands of years old. So this is something that's really important to humanity at a very basic brainstem kind of level. And Super Better harnesses that and taps into it. And I think that's really, really powerful.
And there is one research study that was done that compared using Super Better with CBT, I believe, and a combination of Super Better and CBT. And I believe, damn, I should have looked this up. Now I'm not sure about the results. I'm pretty sure that the results were that Super Better on its own was as effective as CBT and more effective than a combination. Like CBT on its own and Super Better on its own seemed to be better than, like, more effective than the combination of the two, but Super Better on its own was as effective as CBT, which was really, really interesting.
Well, it's one of the things that I like about Super Better is that it is based on scientific research, and the Super Better book that's coming out this fall is also based on all scientific research. So even though Jane McGonigal's not, say, a therapist or a psychologist, she's very well informed and has done a lot of research into that area. So she is drawing on traditional psychotherapy methodology, you know, mindfulness and acceptance and, you know, reframing. I mean, that's what thinking of yourself as a superhero is. It's going from being the victim of I am depression or I am depressed and reframing it like we do in therapy to I am battling depression. And that's why I'm really excited for her new book to come out, because it's going to have all that wonderful research in it, which makes me so happy. And again, I know we're going to have a podcast on it once it comes out. So look forward to that when we can go into more detail. But Josue, you and I have both used Super Better in our therapy practices, and you even got a little something special for doing yours.
I did? What did I get? What are you talking about?
You got in the book?
Oh, well, okay. So apparently, like, I haven't seen the book, right? But I was able to...
You were interviewed for it.
Yeah. I got to communicate with Jane about my experience, like my personal experience with it. And it was more about my personal experience with it than my use with clients. Because it's super influential. And I think again, I haven't seen the book. This is what she told me. I don't know. But I did talk to her about it, so I don't know if it's actually there. Because I haven't seen it. But my understanding is that, you know, she's talking to different people and getting these case studies, and I talked to her about how I use it with my clients, but I use the language more with my clients than I actually use the app. Yeah. And that when I use the app, like, I use it to a point, I achieve my goal, and then I didn't use it anymore. But the kind of the lessons stayed with me and are still with me today. Like, I still talk about using a power up, mm-hmm. and people around me know what I'm talking about because I've explained it to death. And I told her about that, and she agreed with me. She was like, yeah, like, you know, like, a lot of these games, we're making them with a purpose, you know, like the success of it should not be measured, by, like, how much people are using it or how long. Did it achieve its goal? And I think Superbetter is really, really good at helping you achieve a goal. And maybe you don't need it again until like another 3 years, right? Maybe when you gain that weight back, right? You use it again. Or maybe you, something else happened and you remember, listen, last time when I was dealing with anxiety or I was dealing with depression, this really helped. Maybe I can go back to it because that was a tool that I was able to use. Maybe I forgot some of the terminology and then you can go back to it. And yeah, so I'm not sure exactly, like I said, I haven't read the book, but we did have that conversation and that was a huge bonus. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
are you jealous?
I am green. If you could see me right now, I am just blushing green. I also used Superbetter. Obviously, I mentioned a little bit earlier for personal reasons, but I also took the format of Superbetter. And when I was doing one of my extern trainings at the DCVA, the Veterans Affairs here in Washington, D.C., I actually mapped Superbetter onto group therapy for veterans with severe and chronic mental illness. So I, as a foundation, I created 4 modules. So a physical, emotional, resilience, and social factor. Because if I remember, those are the 4. And so each module had 5 lessons in it, so to speak. So on the physical one, we would talk about like nutrition, and the second one, we'd talk about physical exercise and how that impacts the body. And then, you know, when we'd go into the emotional chapter, we would talk about naming emotions and identifying emotions and coping with emotions. And so I really used that as the foundation of the group therapy. And then I would have them go on quests, because usually in CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, there's usual homework assignments. So you want people to go home and practice the skills that you did in the session, because 1 hour with me is not going to be enough to get through an entire week. Like, it's just, I'm good, but I'm not that good. So I would give them, instead of calling it homework, which can be very, can be seen as juvenile, especially when most of these veterans are like my grandfather's age. So I called it a quest or a mission, which again, the veterans responded really well to. You know, the mission would be to write down something that makes you happy and then do it at least once this week. So whether it's talk to your friends or go to a barbecue or even just watch your favorite TV show, do something that makes you happy. And then when they came back and for the next group session, go around the room and ask everybody how their mission went. And if it went well, you know, we all celebrated, we cheered, we clapped. If it didn't go well, you know, getting the support from their peers was really powerful. I didn't even have to say anything. You know, someone say, well, I wasn't able to. And then the person next to him, come on, man, get yourself right and ship shape and other military jargon. And it was really, really cool. And then at the end of each module, we had a big party. You know, we brought in food and music and games. Like, we had Wii Bowling that I was able to steal from the recreational therapist and brought that in and just really celebrated all their hard work. And this was actually published in back, I think it was 2011, maybe 2012, in the Games for Health journal. So my little initial pilot experiment of it. And so, yeah, I've used it personally. I've used it professionally. And I can't, again, I cannot wait for the book, because then I can run around showing people, look, it's a thing. It's a real thing. And it's really happening. And there's science. Look at all the science.
And that's a really good example of what we were talking about last week, about how you can, like, take one thing, right, which is video games, and then apply that to something like Superbetter for something greater. And then you took Superbetter and then applied it to another scenario, right? And then you're like, we can learn from each other. We have the means out there. We just need to be more creative about how we're using it and who our audience is.
Yeah, because I was originally just going to use the app itself, but when I began to realize most of the people I was working with were, you know, my grandfather's age, maybe a little bit younger. We did have some young vets in there too who had smartphones, but most of them did not. And I knew it wasn't going to work. It could not be tech-based. And so having to adapt it to a group format and then with no digital component was definitely a challenge, but I think it made the experience all that much better because it was tailored to the population.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is so cool. So she does talk about Superbetter in Reality is Broken, and there's a couple pages on it, and it's really good. So if you're interested in Superbetter, you should download the app. You can check out the book. I highly recommend it. And then we all will anxiously await with bated breath until, I think, September, when Super Better, the book, comes out.
Yeah, yeah. And I apologize if I didn't say the stats correctly, or that, not the stats, but the results of that research that was published correctly. But I'll put a link in the show notes. I'm pretty sure what I said was right, but we'll check.
Okay.
You double check. Always double check.
Yes.
Anything you hear on PsychTech or anywhere else.
Verify, verify, verify.
Always.
So.
Oh, that... before we go on, Chore Wars is actually really cool too, and I've recommended that to lots of families, and it's a lot of fun. If you have a lot of chores in your house and you're not sure either how to, you know, divide them up, or if, you know, your kids or your spouses are not too keen on, you know, doing their chores, try Chore Wars out, because it's pretty cool.
My only issue with Chore Wars is that my husband is the least competitive person in the universe. I am hyper competitive, so that's probably why we're such a good match. So it would be something like, hey, I'm beating you by 100 points. Don't you want to go clean the bathroom? No, you can win.
I would say he's playing the game smarter than you were. He mastered the game.
It's like how he constantly breaks dishes, and now he's not allowed to do the dishes anymore.
Yeah. Oh, he did that on purpose. You know he did that on purpose. I bet you he didn't break like his favorite Superman mug. I bet you he just broke like a couple old plates.
Jonathan, if you're listening, I'm on to you. Just saying. All right. So I guess moving on. So talking about different games and the way that they're changing their life, the next kind of part of the book talks about using alternate reality strategies to make the world a better place. I think the title is Leveling Up in Life. So using that game mechanic of leveling and feedback and goal setting that she defined at the beginning of the book and applying it to real life, physical life. And as I was thinking about this since the last recording, I realized what we talked about last time about me using the Couch to 5K app belongs right here. Not so much before, but this, it's the perfect application right here.
And Zombie Run, maybe even more.
And Zombie Run, yeah. If you're already a runner, Zombie Run is fantastic. It's an app where, as you're jogging, zombies start coming out of different streets and avenues, so you have to change your run up. And so there's spontaneity, there's excitement, there's, oh, the zombies are going to eat my brains, which is a lot of fun. But I also know that if I was to do Zombie Run, at least at this point, I would just get eaten. So oh, yeah. I'll stick with Couch to 5K and then maybe graduate to Zombie Run.
Even Walking Dead zombies? Or are they all fast zombies?
I don't know. I don't like either. Fast zombies. Fast zombies irritate me.
They irritate you?
Yes.
Yeah.
You're decomposing. How can you be faster than me?
I don't know the science behind it, Kelly. I don't know.
That sounds like that needs to be a PsychTech episode. No. The science behind zombies.
I don't know.
Maybe. Haven't you ever wondered what zombies feel?
Maybe.
Maybe. Well, maybe we can get with, who is it? Conrad from Super Fantastic Nerd Hour, who does the, what is it? Undead podcast? I think that's what it's called. She's like a zombie pro. So I'm sure she would know.
She has a degree in zombieing.
Zombieing, yes.
Yeah.
Zombieology. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. And then we can always get Comixpedia, our good friend Dr. Patrick O'Connor, to come and talk about being a superhero psychologist.
You're really going off the rails here.
I'm getting excited about sharing all the nerddom that there is, and is it inspired by stuff like this? The idea of putting video game stuff into your real life, game design stuff into your everyday life to make it more interesting, to make it more engaging, to make it better.
And she uses examples in the book like Foursquare, for example. Do people still use Foursquare?
Well, Foursquare is now not Foursquare. Foursquare is now a recommendation app. Swarm is the Foursquare child that remembers where you were and checked in and things like that.
Gotcha. And Yelp and things like that, right? That have I told you about the AR part in Yelp, right? The monocle where you can like... If people don't understand the concept of augmented reality, like that's the best example of it.
Yeah.
Where you just hold it up and then you see through your screen, you see what's in front of you through the camera, but then there's an overlay of all the reviews and the links to the different restaurants. So if you're on a street with lots of restaurants, you would see all these like bubbles in the air floating above the actual restaurants. So you'd be like, oh, look, that's a 5-star restaurant right over there. Or this is a 1-star. Keep walking.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the idea of leveling up in life and using augmented reality or game mechanics to make your life more interesting, more exciting, more meaningful. And along the meaningful train, kind of the next thing that the book talks about is having fun with strangers, which is a really weird kind of idea. Because if you think about when you're in a public space with people you don't know, it's kind of like those people don't exist. Think about every airport ever. Or sitting on the bus or on the metro. Usually there's a very strict no touching, no talking policy. which isn't fun. It's something I think that we just accept as normal and as that's what you do, that's the social convention. But imagine if you could be on the metro walking around solving a spy mystery while you were on your way to work. Or going to a museum and being able to solve some kind of national treasure or Da Vinci Code kind of cipher. There's ways to make life so much more interesting and to get other people involved. One of my professors, Josh McCoy, was talking to me about this really cool interstitial game, which is a super fancy term that I just learned. It means that like a game taking place in space, like the merging of the physical and the digital. And apparently it's a game with like 30 laser pointers. And so everybody has a laser pointer and there's this massive, I don't know what it is. It's like a banner or something, but it drapes down over the side of like a building and projected onto that particular banner is kind of a game almost like Tetris, but instead of falling blocks, they're kind of shifting around. And so everybody has to target their laser pointers on the blocks that they want to destroy to allow the whatever to move through. And so you've got this huge group of people and they're all having to work together using laser pointers and a reactive drop cloth. And it's so cool to see these complete and total strangers come together and have this really amazing experience and have fun. And people who wouldn't even have blinked at one another start high-fiving and good jobbing. And, it's so cool. I get so excited.
I think we've had this conversation before.
Have we?
Yeah, what was it? I think it was on the wearables episode.
Maybe.
We were talking about playing. Yeah.
But it bears repeating. Or, even something as simple as Street Pass.
Yeah.
For the DS. So, now, I'm not a Street Passer. Do you Street Pass?
Of course I Street Pass.
Okay, so why don't, just in case
anybody...
Just in case anybody listening doesn't know what Street Pass is, can you give them a quick breakdown?
Yeah, so your Nintendo 3DS handheld system, when it's on but closed, it's like in a standby mode, and it's constantly looking to ping other 3DSs. And then depending on the games that you have, your avatar can travel from your system to the other person's, and you can trade puzzle pieces, you can help each other out in games. So I can walk around with my 3DS and recruit people for my space battle game, I can get new puzzle pieces, I can recruit people for my Mii RPG, but if you have other games, you could also do other things associated with that, like sharing items and things like that. So it's like you're sort of just connecting with people and sharing your progress and the stuff that you have with other people without actually having to interact with them.
So social, but in a not tactile way.
Yep. I mean, sometimes if it's like you're at a school or something, then you know who it was, right? Like sometimes if you're just on the bus, you may not know who the people were. But it's cool because it's like, oh, look, somebody from Missouri was in town and I tagged them. And now that's kind of cool. I can check Missouri on the map in the game and they were able to share with me. I was able to help them. But then if you're somewhere like at work, it's like, oh, me and my coworkers like are constantly helping each other out because every day we bring our 3DS in. And then we can talk about it. It depends.
Yeah. So it's fun because it's exciting because you never know who you're going to run into. And it makes being around strangers can make being around strangers a positive experience as opposed to one that's, ugh.
And it's one of those things where it's like, well, if I actually go outside and go for a walk, like that's a small little bonus, if that's something that you like to have that extra stuff in your game, then you can go for a walk and then see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So moving right along, because again, this, I told Jose Sway when we were talking about doing this that I could do a podcast on every chapter, maybe every sentence. But he's like, no. So he's keeping me in line, as is his job. So that's good. So happiness hacks. That's kind of the next thing she rolls into, is using positive psychology and game design, merging those two things together to create ways to hack into happiness. So ways to kind of boost your mood and based on science. And I know one of the things that I found most interesting when I was reading it the first and even the second time was the hack for thinking about death, because that just seems so counterintuitive to happiness. But she describes a game that she created. It was Tombstone Hold'em, I think. So you're playing poker in a graveyard, which there was some backlash on that. But hey, the people who played had a great time, and those underground didn't really care. So, but I actually had a recent experience where Ellie is my adorable beagle. She is my heart, my soul. I love her more than anything in the world. And we had a scare with her. I thought that I might lose her. And thankfully, it turned out not to be the case. But I have definitely been much more cognizant of my time with her and being more aware and in the moment with her. So, for example, like when we go on our walks, I used to maybe walk her while I was on my phone doing whatever, but now I put my phone away and it's all about being with her and spending time with her, and the time that I spend with her being like really engaged with her, which might sound silly because some people aren't dog people, but the kind of scare almost made me think, well, you know, at some point Ellie will go to the great doggy playpen in the sky and I will be incredibly sad, but I don't want to have any regrets about not having spent time with her. And I think that actually goes back to Super Better. I think it's Super Better, at least on McGonagall's website, about the top five things that people regret at the end of their life. And one of them is not having more fun. Another one is, I think it's not spending more time with the people that they actually like. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I conceptualized it, was having that idea about death and knowing that life is short, for a cliche, to really value the time you have, therefore kind of turns into being happier with the time you have.
Yeah, again, she's using research that suggests that, right? That says thinking about death can help you live, you know, be more aware of your present and enjoy your present life more.
Yes.
And so how do you create an awareness of that? Texas, you know, Tombstone Hold'em is definitely one way to do it. But I'm sure there are different ways.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's also the idea that graveyards are these huge public spaces that nobody ever wants to go to.
Oh, yeah. I know. And so underutilized.
Finding some way to make something that has such a stigma around it less stigmatized. Yep. Another example, not quite a graveyard, but is when you're on an airplane. There were games on planes. And there'd be one plane versus another plane battling in these puzzle games and quiz games. And, you know, so you wanted to see which, then the northbound or the southbound plane had the higher points by the time that they landed. And so here's another environment where you're stuck and nobody really ever wants to sit and coach. It's never really fun. And usually there's, you know, no looking, no touching, no nothing. Don't, you know, you're in your bubble. And this just kind of breaks down those barriers and makes what is usually at best an uncomfortable experience actually fun and happy.
I have no comment.
Oh, okay. I was like, okay, the call drop, is he okay?
I hate flying.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that'll do it.
But I think that the example of, like, again, going back to Super Better, having those power-ups and things like that, that's like a big part of this happiness hacking that she's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing, again, and yeah, knowing those little things, like, again, she has this TED talk where she talks about, like, the how to extend your life, right? So she uses the example of, you know, being aware of death, and she talks about, you know, just looking at pictures of cute animals, right? There's all this research on just looking at cute things, like the effect that it has on us. And, you know, you could have a game where it rewards you with a, you know, picture of a cute something.
Picture of a cute something. What cute something would you want a picture of this way?
I don't know. A lot of that research has to do with like kawaii culture in Japan, where they like chibi everything, and they, you know, there's a cute version of even like the craziest thing. Kind of like now we have this. Well, not now. It's like it's not super new, but it's these what are the like the vinyl dolls? What are they called?
Oh, the Funko.
Yeah, yeah, like the Funko dolls, right? They're like cute versions of movie characters and superheroes and different things, right? And, you know, that type of thing. I don't know. It always surprises me to see something that I didn't expect to be cutified. Cutified.
We'll go with it. Cutified.
Yeah.
Just kind of the last part, kind of closing out the book, is she does a really good job of summarizing everything that has been said before and then applying it to how we can make the future better together. And there's an entire chapter, I think it's called Better Saving the World Together, and using games like, I think Evoke is one of them, A World Without Oil is another example. And again, these are games that you should go look up, you should read the book. I don't think I could even do them justice. And then the last part of the book is about how reality itself is better. And keep in mind, the title of the book is Reality is Broken. And so this is really kind of the call to action at the end of the book to get people who are, quote unquote, escaping into the digital world and the game world, and to kind of try and bring them back and focus their energies towards reality, as well as people who are not gameful or not, you know, maybe they don't play games. Maybe they're just stuck. Maybe they're unhappy. Maybe they like the way things are, but calling for them to kind of come together to not only create a world where people are happier and more productive and healthier, but to create a world that is happier, healthier, and more productive.
And she gives some examples. I think we talked about a few during the Games for Change talk episode that we did. And again, like going back to like my rant last week, it's like we can do certain things, you know, and help improve our lives. Like those AR games and all those stats about like all the billions of hours that the gamers have played. Like those are just like food for thought, right? Like imagine if we could apply that to something else. And something like Evoke is a cool game where it's like there's this comic book narrative, and then at every chapter you're kind of brainstorming how to deal with real life crises. And there's different games that do that. But it doesn't have to be as world-changing as that. Mm-hmm. A few examples that I like that came to mind when we were talking earlier were the Waze app. Have you ever used Waze?
Yeah, I do.
Right? So that's everybody coming together and letting each other know, like, listen, there's a traffic jam here. There's, like, cops over here, right? Don't get a ticket. There's a traffic accident. There's this happened here, this happened there. And then with all that information, like we can help each other get where we need to go faster, more efficiently. We're less surprised by what's going. We can plan ahead better. There's an app called Gas Buddy where, you know, everybody is sharing information on gas prices. So you know where the lowest gas prices are, you know? And if they change, and then for providing that information, you get points and you level up and then you gain like a reputation. And sometimes, in Waze is actually pretty funny because you can see other whales, right, along the road. So you know that there are other Waze users. So it's like you pass somebody. It's like, oh, cool, I passed this person. Yeah. Or, oh, look, like the mayor was over at that Dunkin' Donuts, you know? He's got like a crown on his head. And it's this stupid, really cool thing where it's like you're connected with this person even though you don't know them because you're working on a goal together. And those are really local but so important, like to your everyday life. If you're commuting every day, that's really helpful. And if you have to get gas all the time, that's again, that's also really helpful if you could save a couple bucks.
Well, one thing that I really enjoy with Waze in particular is when people flag cops that are shooting radar.
Yeah.
I feel like it's kind of like cops and robbers, and I play this game in my head where when I see one, I tag it immediately, and when I'm driving, I check.
Yeah.
And I'm so thankful that other people tagged the speed cameras or the people shooting radar. Not that I ever speed, of course, but it is kind of fun to, you know, level the playing field just a little bit.
Yeah, And again, it's like, how does it feel that, like, it's like, you know, like you can wink at this person that you don't know, that you can't even see. It's like, thanks, man. Right back at you, you know?
Thank you for saving me from a speeding ticket that I would never get because I was not speeding.
Yeah. and it might also create more awareness about it, you know? It's like you're not thinking about it, but you're aware. Like, you're looking at your GPS. You're looking at your Waze app. You're like, okay, like, all this stuff is coming up.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. It's great, and it's a small example. But then there's things like the Half the Sky Movement game, which does things on a much broader scale. And it's a Facebook game where, as you play, you're learning about different cultures and women in different parts of the world and what they have to go through. And you're kind of helping them develop their own businesses and help each other out. But then as you play and you level up, every time you level up, there's sponsors who have agreed to give donations based on how much experience people get and when people level up. So I'm trying to level up. Not just to, like, I'm interested in to see what's going to happen to these characters, but I also want to help the cause by, like, at one more level, and, like, this company will give another dollar to this cause, or another $5 to this cause. Or if enough people, you know, level up to here, this company is going to give this much money. And it's a real world, you know, on two fronts. You're learning about something. You're creating awareness about an issue. And you're also actually supporting it financially. So there's so many different ways to do this type of thing, and just by engaging. And that's one of those games that I don't really like the format of. It's kind of it's a very click, you know, like, here are your four options. What would you like to do? And I like some games like that, like, that are more elaborate, but that game, it was cool because it was educational and because there was an actual real world effect, which we talked about last time.
Yeah, and that idea of meaning is so important. The fact that you can feel that you actually made a difference somehow is, I mean, some people call it armchair activism. You know, when people put up either Black Lives Matter or during the Human Rights Campaign on their Facebook profiles, and that's all they do. You know, there's some back and forth on that of whether that's real activism or fake activism. But to me, that's the same argument as, are there girl gamers and fake girl gamers and this utter nonsense. But the idea of being able to help somebody is awesome. And maybe for us in particular, because that's kind of the profession that we gravitated to. But I would dare to say that most people enjoy and derive some kind of intrinsic happiness from being able to help somebody else.
I can't, just like how you engage people is really important, but a part of that engagement can be that effect. Like, maybe your game preferably it's fun, right? But again, maybe Half the Sky, the point of it is just to, you know, get people to those first two or three levels to get, you know, and maybe just get a few donations, but the biggest part of it is to educate people, right? And make people aware of something that's going on. And I do believe that there are degrees of helpfulness, right?
Yeah, of course.
Like a hashtag on Twitter does, you know, one degree of something, and then something like playing Half the Sky maybe does a little bit more, you know, depending on how much you do. But again, you are trying to create awareness. Every little bit does help, but we can go way beyond something like just a hashtag on Twitter. We can go way, way beyond that. And I think Half the Sky is a really good example. And a lot of the games that are out there, there's so many games out there. Every day that I can, you know, I search a different topic, I can find different games. And there are physical games and digital games. And I don't know. I think I'm curious how many people have been influenced by Jane's book in particular, you know? And I'm really curious to see what kind of stories are in Super Better, because I'm guessing that there's more than just talk about the Super Better app, you know, and program. And I'm hoping that there's an extension of this. And I would love to see more examples, bigger examples. I think, I don't know, I felt like when we had our Games for Change talk, I was like, we were maybe a little down on the stuff that we saw. But that was just one conference, right?
Right.
And there we mentioned there are many of them. This is something that's happening more and more and more. And And one part we didn't even talk about that is in the book is that application in the workplace and even for consumers and things like that. You know, there are different ways that people are at least trying to engage people differently. And I think the more we start realizing that these are like the best ways to engage people, then other fields will apply the same thing to kind of help in those areas. And we're all over the place right now, but there are examples of doing it really, really well.
Well, I think the best way to kind of close up this episode is with a quote from Jean McGonigal's book, of course. And it's one that I have tabbed and starred and underlined and highlighted. And it's probably one of my favorite quotes ever. Not going to say it made it in my dissertation. Not going to say it didn't. But
not going to say you have it tattooed somewhere.
Hey, that was a secret, okay? Games don't distract us from our real lives. They fill our real lives with positive emotions, positive activity, positive experience, and positive strengths. Games aren't leading us to the downfall of human civilization. They're leading us to its reinvention. I have chills. I have goosebumps. I literally have goosebumps. Like, every time I read that quote, it just... so many feels.
Let's dissect it real quick. Let's dissect it. Because I think we talked about that last week, and...
I don't think there's anything to dissect. It addresses the idea that games are a waste of time and a distraction and not with value, and then refutes it strongly, and that the future forward is in games and game design. One of my professors, his name is Lindsay Grace, he said, I think it was on a podcast he was on, that the game design degree is the next liberal arts degree. You know, the way that people go and just get a liberal arts education now and usually come out with, say, like a psychology degree, which kind of gives them a very broad template to work from, that the future of that is going to be game design. It's going to be such a basic part of our lives in the future that it's going to become necessary. And you're going to start seeing game designers pop up in more and more locations.
I agree. I actually agree.
We agreed on something. That's exciting.
We should
quit while we're ahead, Josue.
fine. Wrap it up.
All right. Well, thank you all for tuning in to this episode of Psych Tech. Again, if you missed out on the first episode, we were reviewing Jane McGonigal's book, Reality is Broken. This was part two. You can always check out part one on psychtechpodcast.com, which is the mothership. We're also on Twitter at Psych Tech Cast. You can find us there. We're on Facebook. We're on... TuneIn, and we have an RSS feed, and we're all over the place. So you can easily find us there. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode, and we'll talk to you soon.